It was around noon. In the jungle behind Rincewind, creatures whooped and gibbered. Mosquitoes the size of hummingbirds whined around his head. "Of course," he said for the tenth time, "they've never really got round to inventing paper." The stonemason stood back, handed the latest blunted obsidian chisel to his assistant, and gave Rincewind an expectant look. Rincewind stood back and examined the rock critically. "It's very good," he said. "I mean, it's a very good likeness. You've got his hairstyle and everything. Of course, he's not as, square as that normally, but yes, very good. And here's the chariot, and here's the step pyramids, yes. Well, it looks as though they want you to go to the city with them," he said to Eric.
"Tell them yes," said Eric firmly.
Rincewind turned to the head man. "Yes," he said.
"Hunched figure in triple-feathered headdress over three dots."
Rincewind sighed. Without saying a word, the stonemason put a fresh stone chisel into his unresisting fingers and manhandled a new slab of granite into position. One of the problems of being a Tezuman, apart from having a godlike quest over Coatl, is that if you unexpectedly need to order an extra pint of milk tomorrow, you probably should have started writing the note for the milkman last month. Tezuman are the only people who beat themselves to death with their own suicide notes. It was late afternoon by the time the chariot trotted into the slab city around the largest pyramid between lines of cheering Tezuman.
"This is more like it," said Eric, graciously acknowledging the cheers. "They're very pleased to see us."
"Yes," said Rincewind gloomily. "I wonder why."
"Well, because I'm the new ruler, of course."
"Hmm." Rincewind glanced sidelong at the parrot, who had been unnaturally silent for some time and was now cowering up against his ear like an elderly spinster in a strip club. It was having serious thoughts about the exquisite feather headdresses.
"Wasp-name bastards!" it croaked. "Any wasp-name lays a hand on me, and that wasp-name is minus one finger, I'm telling you."
"There's something not right about this," said Rincewind.
"What's that?"
said the parrot.
"Everything."
"I'm telling you, one feather out of place."
Rincewind wasn't used to people being pleased to see him. It was unnatural and boded no good. These people were not only cheering, they were throwing flowers and hats. The hats were made out of stone, but the thought was there. Rincewind thought they were rather odd hats. They didn't have crowns. They were, in fact, mere discs with holes in the middle. The procession trotted up the wide avenues of the city to a cluster of buildings at the foot of the pyramid, where another group of civic dignitaries was waiting for them. They were wearing lots of jewellery. It was all basically the same. There are quite a lot of uses to which you can put a stone disc with a hole in the middle, and the Tezuman had explored all but one of them. More important, though, were the boxes and boxes of treasure stacked in front of them. They were stuffed with jewels. Eric's eyes widened.
"The tribute," he said.
Rincewind gave up. It really was working. He didn't know how, he didn't know why, but at last it was all going right. The setting sun glinted off a dozen fortunes. Of course, it belonged to Eric, presumably, but maybe there was enough for him too. "Naturally," he said weakly. "What else did you expect?" And there was feasting, and long speeches that Rincewind couldn't understand, but which were punctuated with cheers and nods and bows in Eric's direction. And there were long recitals of Tezuman music, which sounds like someone clearing a particularly difficult nostril. Rincewind left Eric sitting proudly enthroned in the firelight, and wandered disconsolately across to the pyramid.
"I was enjoying the wasp name," said the parrot reproachfully.
"I can't settle down," said Rincewind. "I'm sorry, but this sort of thing has never happened to me before, all the jewels and things. Everything going as expected. It's not right." He looked up the monstrous face of the steep pyramid, red and flickering in the firelight. Every huge block was carved with a bas-relief of Tezuman doing terribly inventive things to their enemies. It suggested that the Tezuman, whatever sterling qualities they possessed, were not traditionally inclined to welcome perfect strangers and heap them with jewels. The overall effect of the great heap of carvings was very artistic. It was just the details that were horrible. While working his way along the wall, he came to a huge door, which artistically portrayed a group of prisoners apparently being given a complete medical check-up. Well, from a distance it did, anyway. Close to? No. It opened into a short, torch-lit tunnel. Rincewind took a few steps along it, telling himself he could always hurry out again, and came out into a lofty space which occupied most of the inside of the pyramid. There were more torches all around the walls, which illuminated everything quite well. That wasn't really welcome, because what they mainly illuminated was a giant-sized statue of Quetzalcoatl, the feathered boa. If you had to be in a room with that statue, you'd prefer it to be pitch dark. Or, then again, perhaps not. A better option would be to put the thing in a darkened room while you had insomnia 1,000 miles away, trying to forget what it looked like. It's just a statue, Rincewind told himself. It's not real. They just used their imagination, that's all.
What the what's name is it?
Said the parrot. It's their god.
Get away!
No, really. It's Quetzalcoatl. Half man, half chicken, half jaguar, half serpent, half scorpion, and half mad. The parrot's beak moved as it worked this out.
That makes a what's name total of 3 homicidal maniacs, it said.
About right, yes, said the statue. On the other hand, said Rincewind instantly, I do think it's frightfully important for people to have the right to worship in their own special way, and now I think we'll just be going, so just...
Please, don't leave me here, said the statue. Please take me with you.
Could be tricky, Rincewind said hurriedly, backing away. It's not me, you understand. It's just that where I come from, everyone has this racial prejudice thing against 30-foot-high people with fangs and talons and necklaces of skulls all over them. I just think you'll have trouble fitting in. The parrot tweaked his ear.
It's coming from behind the statue, you stupid wasp name, it croaked.
It turned out to be coming from a hole in the floor. A pale face peered short-sightedly up at Rincewind from the depths of a pit. It was an elderly, good-natured face with a faintly worried expression.
"Hello?" said Rincewind.
"You don't know what it means to hear a friendly voice again," said the face, breaking into a grin. "If you could just sort of help me up."
"Sorry," said Rincewind. "You're a prisoner, are you?"
"Alas, this is so."
"I don't know that I ought to go around rescuing prisoners just like that," said Rincewind. "I mean, you might have done anything."
"I am entirely innocent of all crimes, I assure you."
"Ah, well, so you say," said Rincewind gravely. "But if the Tezumen have judged..."
"What's name, what's name, what's name?"
shrieked the parrot in his ear as it bounced up and down on his shoulder.
"Haven't you got the faintest? Where have you been? He's a prisoner. A prisoner in a temple. You've got to rescue prisoners in temples. That's what they're bloody there for."
"No, it isn't," snapped Rincewind. "That's all you know. He's probably here to be sacrificed. Isn't that right?"
He looked at the prisoner for confirmation.
The face nodded.
"Indeed you are correct. Flayed alive, in fact."
"There," said Rincewind to the parrot. "See? You think you know everything. He's here to be flayed alive.
Every inch of skin removed to the accompaniment of exquisite pain," added the prisoner helpfully.
Rincewind paused. He thought he knew the meaning of the word exquisite, and it didn't seem to belong anywhere near pain.
"What, every bit?" he said.
"This is apparently the case."
"Gosh! What was it you did?"
The prisoner sighed.
"You'd never believe me," he said.
The Demon King let the mirror darken and drummed his fingers on his desk for a moment. Then he picked up a speaking tube and blew into it. Eventually, a distant voice said,
"Yes, Cuff?"
"Yes, sir,"
snapped the king. The distant voice muttered something.
"Yes, sir,"
it added.
"Do we have a Quetzalcoatl working here?"
"Oh, see, Gov."
The voice faded, came back.
"Yes, Gov."
"Is he a duke, earl, count, or baron?" said the king.
"No, Gov."
"Well, what is he?"
There was a long silence at the other end.
"Well?"
said the king.
"He's no one much, Gov."
The king glared at the tube for some time. "You try," he thought. "You make proper plans, you try to get organized, you try to help people, and this is what you get."
"Send him to see me," he said.
Outside, the music rose to a crescendo and stopped. The fires crackled. From the distant jungles, 1,000 glowing eyes watched the proceedings. The High Priest stood up and made a speech. Eric beamed like a pumpkin. A long line of Tezumen brought baskets of jewels, which they scattered before him. Then the High Priest made a second speech. This one seemed to end on a question.
"Fine," said Eric. "Jolly good, keep it up."
He scratched his ear and ventured,
"You can all have a half-holiday."
The High Priest repeated the question again, in a slightly impatient tone of voice.
"I'm the one, yes," said Eric,
just in case they were unclear.
"You've got it exactly right."
The High Priest spoke again. This time there was no slightly about it.
"Let's just run through this again, shall we?" said the Demon King.
He leaned back in his throne.
"You happened to find the Tezumen one day and decided, I think I recall your words correctly, that they were a bunch of Stone Age no-hopers sitting around in a swamp, being no trouble to anyone. Am I right? Whereupon you entered the mind of one of their high priests. I believe at that time they worshipped a small stick, drove him insane and inspired the tribes to unite, terrorize their neighbors, and bring forth upon the continent a new nation dedicated to the proposition that all men should be taken to the top of ceremonial pyramids and be chopped up with stone knives."
The king pulled his notes towards him.
"Oh, yes, some of them were also to be flayed alive," he added.
Quez Overquattle shuffled his feet.
"Whereupon," said the king, "they immediately engaged in a prolonged war with just about everyone else, bringing death and destruction to thousands of moderately blameless people, etc., etc. Now look, this sort of thing has got to stop."
Quez Overquattle swayed back a bit.
"It was only, you know, an obby," said the imp. "I thought, you know, it was the right thing sort of thing. Death and destruction and that." "You did you?" said the king. "Thousands of more or less innocent people dying, straight out of our hands," he snapped his fingers, "just like that. Straight off to their happy hunting ground or whatever. That's the trouble with you people. You don't think of the big picture. I mean, look at the Tezumen. Gloomy, unimaginative, obsessive. By now they could have invented a whole bureaucracy and taxation system that would have turned the minds of the continent to slag. Instead of which, they're just a bunch of second-rate axe-murderers. What a waste!"
Quez Overquattle squirmed. The king swiveled the throne back and forth a bit.
"Now I want you to go straight back down there and tell them you're sorry," he said.
"Pardon?"
"Tell them you've changed your mind. Tell them that what you really wanted them to do was strive day and night to improve the lot of their fellow men. It'll be a winner."
"What?" said Quez Overquattle, looking extremely shifty.
"You want me to manifest myself?" "They've seen you already, haven't they? I saw the statue. It's very lifelike."
"Well, yes, I've appeared in dreams and that," said the demon uncertainly.
"Right, then. Get on with it."
Quez Overquattle was clearly unhappy about something.
"Eh?" he said. "You want me to actually materialize sort of thing? I mean, actually sort of turn up on the spot?"
"Yes."
"Oh."
The prisoner dusted himself down and extended a wrinkled hand to Rincewind.
"Many thanks. Ponce Dacquerm," he said.
"Pardon?"
"It's my name."
"Oh."
"It's a proud old name," said Dacquerm,
searching Rincewind's eyes for any traces of mockery.
"Fine," said Rincewind blankly. "We were searching for the Fountain of Youth," Dacquerm went on.
Rincewind looked him up and down.
"Any luck?" he said politely.
"Not significantly, no." Rincewind peered back down into the pit.
"You said we," he said. "Where's everyone else?"
"They got religion." Rincewind looked up at the statue of Quez Overquattle. It took no imagination whatsoever to imagine what kind.
"I think," he said carefully,
that we had better go.'
"'Too true,' said the old man. "'And quickly, too, before the ruler of the world turns up.'
Rincewind went cold.
"'It starts,' he thought. "'I knew it was all going to turn out badly, and this is where it starts. "'I must have an instinct for these things.'
"'How do you know about that?' he said.
"'Oh, they've got this prophecy. "'Well, not a prophecy, really. "'It's more the entire history of the world start to finish. "'It's written all over this pyramid,' said De Quirm cheerfully. "'My word, I wouldn't like to be the ruler when he arrives. "'They've got plans.'
Eric stood up.
"'Now, just you listen to me,' he said. "'I'm not going to stand for this sort of thing. "'I'm your ruler, you know.'
Rincewind stared at the blocks nearest the statue. It had taken the Tezimen 2 stories, 20 years, and 10,000 tons of granite to explain what they intended to do to the ruler of the world, but the result was, well, graphic. He would be left in no doubt that they were annoyed. He might even go so far as to deduce that they were quite vexed.
"'But why do they give him all the jewels to start with?' he said, pointing.
"'Well, he is the ruler,' said De Quirm. "'He's entitled to some respect, I suppose.' Rincewind nodded. "'There was a sort of justice in it. "'If you were a tribe who lived in a swamp in the middle of a damp forest, "'didn't have any metal, had been saddled with a god like Quetzalcoatl, "'and then found someone who said he was in charge of the whole affair, "'you probably would want to spend some time explaining to him "'how incredibly disappointed you were. "'The Tezimen had never seen any reason to be subtle in dealing with deities.' It was a very good likeness of Eric. His eye followed the story onto the next wall. This block showed a very good likeness of Rincewind. He had a parrot on his shoulder.
"'Hang on,' he said. "'That's me.'
"'You should see what they're doing to you on the next block,' said the parrot smugly. "'It'll turn your wasname.'
Rincewind looked at the block. His wasname revolved.
"'We'll just leave very quietly,' he said firmly. "'I mean, we won't stop to thank them for the meal.' "'We can always send them a letter later, you know, so's not to be impolite.'
"'Just a moment,' said De Quirm, as Rincewind dragged at his arm. "'I haven't had a chance to read all the blocks yet. "'I want to see how the world's going to end. "'How it's going to end for everyone else, I don't know,' said Rincewind grimly, dragging him down the tunnel. "'I know how it's going to end for me.'
He stepped out into the dawn light, which was fine. Where he went wrong was stepping into a semicircle of Tezimen. They had spears. They had exquisitely chipped obsidian spearheads, which, like their swords, were nowhere near as sophisticated as ordinary, coarse, inferior steel weapons. Was it better to know that you were going to be skewered by delicate examples of genuine ethnic origin, rather than nasty forge-made items hammered out by people not in contact with the cycles of nature? Probably not, Rincewind decided.
"'I always say,' said De Quirm, "'that there is a good side to everything.'
Rincewind, trussed to the next slab, turned his head with difficulty.
"'Where is it at the moment, precisely?' he said.
De Quirm squinted down across the swamps and the forest roof.
"'Well, it's a first-class view from up here to begin with.'
"'Oh, good,' said Rincewind. "'You know, I never would have looked at it like that. "'You're absolutely right.' It's the kind of view you'll remember for the rest of your life, I expect. I mean, it's not as if it'll be any great feat of recollection.
There's no need to be sarcastic. I was only passing a remark.
I want my mum, said Eric from the middle slab.
Chin up, lad, said De Quirm. At least you're being sacrificed for something worthwhile. I just suggested they tried using the wheels upright so they'd roll. I'm afraid they're not very responsive to new ideas round here. Still, nil desperandum, where there's life, there's hope.
Rincewind growled. If there was one thing he couldn't stand, it was people who were fearless in the face of death. It seemed to strike at something absolutely fundamental in him.
In fact, said De Quirm, I think...
He rolled from side to side experimentally, tugging at the vines which were holding him down.
Yes, I think that when they did these ropes up... "'Yes, definitely. They—'
"'What? What?' said Rincewind.
"'Yes, definitely,' said De Quirm. "'I'm absolutely sure about it. "'They did them up very tightly and professionally. "'Not an inch of give in them anywhere.'
"'Thank you,' said Rincewind.
The flat top of the truncated pyramid was in fact quite large, with plenty of room for statues, priests, slabs, gutters,
knife-chipping production lines, and all the other things the Tesiman needed for the bulk disposal of religion. In front of Rincewind, several priests were busy chanting a long list of complaints about swamps, mosquitoes, lack of metal ore, volcanoes, the weather, the way obsidian never kept its edge, the trouble with having a godlike Quetzalcoatl, the way wheels never worked properly, however often you laid them flat and pushed them, and so on. The prayers of most religions generally praise and thank the gods involved, either out of general piety or in the hope that he or she will take the hint and start acting responsibly. The Tesiman, having taken a long, hard look around their world and decided bluntly that things were just about as bad as they were ever going to get, had perfected the art of plain chant whinge. "Won't be long now," said the parrot, from its perch atop a statue of one of the Tesiman's lesser gods. It had got there by a complicated sequence of events that had involved a lot of squawking, a cloud of feathers, and three Tesiman priests with badly swollen thumbs. "The High Priest is just performing a wasp name in honour of Quetzalcoatl," it went on conversationally. "You've drawn quite a crowd." "I suppose you wouldn't kind of hop down here and bite through these ropes, would you?" said Rincewind. "Not a chance." Thought so. This was very embarrassing. He'd enjoyed being the Tesiman god. He'd been really impressed by their single-minded devotion to duty. He'd been very gratified by the incredible lifelike statue in the pyramid, and it really hurt to have to reveal that, in one important particular, it was incorrect. He was 6 inches high. "Now then," he began, "this is very important." Unfortunately, no one ever found out why. At that moment, the luggage breasted the top of the pyramid, its legs whirring like propellers, and landed squarely on the slabs. There was a brief, flat squeak. "It was a funny old world," said the Quirm. "You had to laugh, really. If you didn't, you'd go mad, wouldn't you? 1 minute strapped to a slab and about to undergo exquisite torture, the next being given a breakfast, a change of clothes, a hot tub, and a free lift out of the kingdom. It made you believe there was a god. Of course, the Tesiman knew there was a god, and that he was currently a small and distressing greasy patch on top of the pyramid, which left them with a bit of a problem. The luggage squatted in the city's main plaza. The entire priesthood was sitting around it and watching it carefully, in case it did anything amusing or religious.
"Are you going to leave it behind?"
said Eric.
"It's not as simple as that," said Rincewind. "It generally catches up. Let's just go away quickly."
"But we'll take the tribute, won't we?"
"I think that could be an amazingly bad idea," said Rincewind. "Let's just quietly go while they're in a good temper. The novelty will wear off soon, I expect."
"And I've got to get on with my search for the Fountain of Youth," said the Quirm.
"Oh, yes," said Rincewind.
"I've devoted my whole life to it, you know," said the old man proudly.
Rincewind looked him up and down.
"Really?" he said.
"Oh, yes, exclusively, ever since I was a boy."
Rincewind's expression was one of acute puzzlement.
"In that case," he began, in the manner of one talking to a child, "wouldn't it have been better, you know, more sensible, if you just got on with..."
"What?" said the Quirm.
"Oh, never mind," said Rincewind. "I'll tell you what, though," he added. "I think, in order to prevent you getting, you know, bored, we should present you with this wonderful talking parrot." He made a swift grab, while keeping his thumbs firmly out of harm's way. "It's a jungle fowl."
That was exactly what he asked for, and exactly what he didn't really want. It was just that he didn't feel in control of things. Which was, of course, ridiculous. If the best came to the best, he could always materialise and sort things out personally. But he liked people to believe that all the bad things happening to them were just fate and destiny. It was one of the few things that cheered him up. He turned back to the mirror. After a while, he had to adjust the temporal control. 1 minute, the breathless, humid jungles of Klatch. The next,
"I thought we were going to go back to my room," Eric complained.
"I thought that too," said Rincewind, shouting to be heard over the rumbling.
"Snap your fingers again, demon.
Not on your life. There's plenty of places worse than this."
"But it's all hot and dark."
Rincewind had to concede that. It was also shaking and noisy. When his eyes grew used to the blackness, he could make out a few spots of light here and there, whose dim radiance suggested that they were inside something like a boat. There was a definite feel of carpentry about everything, and a powerful smell of wood shavings and glue. If it was a boat, then it was having an awfully painful launching down a slipway greased with rocks. A jolt slung him heavily against a bulkhead.
"I must say," complained Eric, "if this is where the most beautiful woman in the world lives, I don't think much of her choice of boudoir. You'd think she'd put a few cushions or something around the place."
"Boudoir?" said Rincewind.
"She's bound to have one," said Eric smugly. "I've read about them. She reclines on it."
"Tell me," said Rincewind, "have you ever felt the need to have a cold bath and a brisk run around the playing fields?"
"Never."
"It could be worth a try." The rumbling stopped abruptly. There was a distant clanging noise, such as might be made by a pair of great big gates being shut. Rincewind thought he heard some voices fading into the distance, and a chuckle. It wasn't a particularly pleasant chuckle. It was more of a snigger, and it boded no good for someone. Rincewind had a pretty good idea who. He'd stopped wondering how he'd come to be here, wherever it was. Malign forces, that was probably it. At least nothing particularly dreadful was happening to him right now. Probably it was only a matter of time. He groped around a bit until his fingers encountered what turned out to be, following an inspection by the light of the nearest knothole, a rope ladder.
"First, nothing but sawing and hammering. The next thing, there's a damn great wooden horse outside the gates. So I think, that's funny. A bloody great wooden horse with air holes. That's the kind of little detail I notice, see? Air holes. So I muster all the lads, and we nips out extra early and drag it in the gates, as per expectations. And then we bides quiet-like around it, waiting to see what it coughs up, in a manner of speaking. Now," he pushed his unshaven face close to Rincewind, "you've got a choice, see? Top seat or bottom seat, it's up to you. I just have to put the word in. You play discus with me, and I'll play discus with you." Ball games were unknown in the Discworld at this time.
"What seat?" said Rincewind, reeling from the gusts of garlic.
"It's the war triremes," said the sergeants cheerfully. "Three seats, see, one above the other. Triremes. You get chained to the oars for years, see, and it's all according to whether you're in the top seat, up in the fresh air and that, or the bottom seat where," he grinned, "you're not. So it's down to you, lads. Be cooperative, and all you'll need to worry about will be the seagulls. Now, why only the two of you?" He leaned back again.
"Excuse me," said Eric. "Is that sort by any chance?"
"You wouldn't be trying to make fun of me, would you now, boy? Only there's such a thing as quinquereme, see? You wouldn't like that at all."
"No, sir," said Eric. "If you please, sir, I'm just a little lad led astray by bad companionship."
"Oh, thank you," said Rincewind bitterly. "You just accidentally drew a lot of occult circles, did you? And—"
"Sarge, Sarge!"
A soldier burst into the guardroom. The sergeant looked up.
"There's another of them, Sarge, right outside the gates this time."
The sergeant grinned triumphantly at Rincewind.
"Oh, that's it, is it?" he said. "You were just the advance party come to open the gates or whatever. Right. We'll just go and sort your friends out, and we'll be right back."
He indicated the captives.
"You stay here. If they move, do something horrible to them."
Rincewind and Eric were left alone with the guard.
"You know what you've done, don't you?" said Eric. "You've only gone and taken us all the way back to the Tassortian Wars. Thousands of years. We did it at school. The wooden oars—"
Rincewind went on.
"They might do,"
the guard conceded. Eric began to giggle. It had begun to dawn on the guard that there was a lot of shouting going on in the distance. Someone had tried to blow a bugle, but the notes gurgled into silence after a few bars. "Bit of a fight going on out there, by the sound of it," said Rincewind. "People winning their spurs, doing heroic deeds of valour, being noticed by superior officers, that sort of thing. And here's you, hanging around in here with us."
"I've got to stick by me post," said the guard.
"Exactly the right attitude," said Rincewind. "Never mind about everyone else out there fighting valiantly to defend their city and womenfolk against the foe. You stop it here and guard us. That's the spirit. They'll probably put up a statue to you in City Square if there's one left. He did his duty, they'll write on it."
The soldier appeared to think about this,
and while he was doing so, there was a terrible splintering creak from the direction of the main gates.
"Look," he said desperately, "if I just pop out for a minute."
"Don't you worry about us," said Rincewind encouragingly. "It's not even as if we're armed."
"Right,"
said the soldier.
"Thanks."
He gave Rincewind a worried smile and hurried off in the direction of the noise. Eric looked at Rincewind with something like admiration.
"That was actually quite amazing," he said.
"Going to go a long way, that lad," said Rincewind. "A sound military thinker, if ever I saw one. Come on, let's run away."
"Where to?"
Rincewind sighed. He'd tried to make his basic philosophy clear time and again, and people never got the message.
"Don't you worry about two," he said. "In my experience, that always takes care of itself. The important word is away."